There's certainly a lot of interest in Abraham Lincoln, his family, and that period in our country's history. And lucky for us, one of Wisconsin's best and most successful authors has provided us with new looks at and different perspectives of that era. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jennifer Cheverini, my guest. She's a New York Times bestselling Wisconsin author, well known for her Elm Creek quilt series, and more recently, very well known for her standalone historical tales, like her latest, which is titled Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. Always glad to have her with us, Jennifer Cheverini. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Wonderful to have you. You know, the last three novels you've written have been set in the Civil War era. And you know, some of the characters make appearances in one or more of the stories, but they're standalone novels. What keeps drawing you to that period of our history?
Well, I think it's such a significant period in our nation's history, where we saw some of our country's greatest moral failings paired up against our greatest attributes. So we would see the slavery and how that was one of the most serious problems and you could even say sins of our nation.
Mm-hmm.
But upside along that, you also see great courage, people trying to overcome adversity, people trying to help others. And women's roles were really changing in this period, too, as the challenges of war, the new responsibilities they took on homes and farms and businesses gave them new roles in society, whether mm-hmm. they were simply trying to keep the family farm alive or mm-hmm. if they were organizing and trying to become more political in order to advocate for their loved ones, their brothers and sons and husbands who were off fighting the war, often without the resources that they very badly needed.
Yeah.
So watching that juxtaposition of these new roles for women and the new burdens that they took on, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, against this crucial test of our nation's democracy is such a rich mm-hmm. area to mine for storytelling.
And frankly, we have not seen, it's great that you're doing this because it just simply hasn't been done very much, I know.
Well, I know that when I was taking history classes many, many years ago, we learned about the battles and the generals and the
yeah.
presidents. And of course, that's very important, and I think we should still learn that. But to me, American history is made up of what ordinary people were doing in the course of an ordinary day. It's yeah. what mothers were doing. It's what shopkeepers were doing, seamstresses, and mm-hmm. Children. And those are the stories that compel me and intrigue me. What would life have been like for an ordinary person? Now, of course, in my stories, I do focus on rather extraordinary people
yes.
as well. But by focusing on women, by focusing on people of color, I think I'm showing that there's a lot more to this era mm-hmm. than just what was going on in the battlefield, than just what was going on the Senate floor.
Our guest today, Jennifer Cheverini, author of many books, including the latest we're talking about today, Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. You can join in. Are you a fan of Jennifer's books? Do you have a favorite? Have you the person who's sort of highlighted or featured in this book is Kate Chase. Have you heard of her or her father, Salmon Chase, before today's show? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And this is the first day of the release day, is it not?
That's right. Today is the official publication day.
Well, the family we spend the most time with in this book is that of Salmon Chase? Is that salmon? Is that the proper way to pronounce it?
I did inquire, and I was told it was salmon, P.
It
Chase.
It is salmon.
And he did not like his name. When his eldest daughter was expecting a child, and she wanted to name it after her father. And he wrote to her very expressly, "No, you shouldn't. I've never liked my fishy name." So she did not use that after all, because he did not want that passed down.
All right. Well, Salmon Chase, then. What? Tell us about him. What was he like?
Well, he was a fascinating figure, too. And he was a abolitionist and a lawyer. He wasn't originally from Ohio, but that's really where he started launching his political and lawyer career. And it was his life's ambition to be president of the United States. It was said that he had the presidential fever, and that presidential fever was a terrible disease, and no one had it worse than Salmon Chase. And he certainly had an illustrious career without ever achieving that goal. He was a respected lawyer. He heard a lot of cases for runaway slaves in Cincinnati, and so he became known as someone who was a special friend to people of color in that area. And he went on to become the governor of Ohio, and he had other political roles along the way, and he was chosen by President Lincoln to be his first Secretary of the Treasury. But what he wanted was that presidential chair. And so his eldest daughter, Chase, took that on as her life's ambition to help him achieve that goal of becoming president. And it wasn't just because she wanted to make her father happy. Salmon P. Chase was 3 times widowed, and as his eldest daughter, Kate would have been his official hostess in Washington, D.C. She would have been first lady. And that was a role
she wanted.
She did want it. And she probably would have been very good at it, too.
But yeah, I think so. One more little thing about Salmon Chase, and then I want to talk some more about Kate for sure. He was Lincoln's rival, but Lincoln had him in his cabinet.
Absolutely.
And William Seward was in there as well, who Chase didn't like so much either.
No, Chase, especially once they were all in Washington together, he was pretty jealous of the Secretary of State. First of all, he wanted that job when he didn't get president. But they just got along really well. Seward and Lincoln became very good friends, even though they had been intense rivals all the way leading up to the election and even afterward. But they just struck up a good friendship. And Chase was more reserved. He didn't like the theater. He didn't always get the joke. And so he wasn't naturally warm and amusing. He didn't inspire affection the way that President Lincoln did. And that hurt him in the election. He was brilliant. He was very intelligent, good at his work. But he couldn't really connect with the people the way that Lincoln could. And they contended very fiercely for that nomination at the presidential convention. And he had his sights set on it and was really hoping to get it up until the very last minute when Lincoln pulled it out.
And he, as it turned out, for the country's sake, he probably was in the position he should have been in, because he was very good in the Treasury.
He absolutely was. And I think that's something that we tend to overlook, because we know about the generals who have to lead the troops and win the war. And we all ought to know what a task Lincoln had keeping the country together, trying to keep everything going. But if you were going to have a war, you have to find a way to pay for it. And that was no easy task. And that task fell to the Secretary of the Treasury.
Yeah.
And so it was very good that he was in the position that he was. And that was just another sign of Lincoln's brilliance and his humility, that he didn't choose people who were just always going to agree with him when he formed his cabinet. We know that the famous phrase, team of rivals, he chose the people who were best for those jobs, regardless of any kind of personal snub that he might have been given sometime 10 years ago. Whereas other people aren't that big. They can't set aside those little differences and really assemble the best team. And Lincoln did that, and it certainly to the betterment of the nation, that he saw beyond his own ego and got the best people for the job. And he would say that in his letters, too, because people would say, why do you want that person working for you? And he would say, he's the best person for the job. I'm going to give that. I'm going to make sure he serves the country because the country needs him.
Well, you tell, and we'll go to the Lauren. Hang on, in a minute, we'll get to you and other callers as well. By the way, the number to call with your questions or comments, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. I do want to get back to Kate because the book is really, it's not told by his daughter, Kate Chase. It's really through her eyes, though, that we see these events unfold. And maybe you could say, how did you learn about her, or why did you put her in the center of the story?
Well, this book really is Kate's story.
Yeah.
And so, of course, everything that you see from her relationship with her father to Washington to Mrs. Lincoln, all of those things are filtered through her perspective. I first discovered Kate Chase when I was researching Mrs. Lincoln's dressmaker. And learning more about Mrs. Lincoln's time in Washington, I discovered that she had this social and political rival in the form of a rather young woman, yeah, and the daughter of the Secretary of the Treasury. And these women had very much in common. They were both very intelligent, well-educated, brilliant conversationalists, politically savvy. They were both staunch abolitionists, and of course, they were both very strongly for the Union. It would have been wonderful if those things that they held in common could have brought them together in friendship. But that just did not happen because Mrs. Lincoln was the first lady, and that was a role that Kate coveted very much. And Kate wanted her father to be president, whereas Mrs. Lincoln thought her husband was actually the better man for the job and doing quite well. And she did not appreciate any of the Chases' efforts to unseat her husband. So naturally, that did bring them into contention. And of course, the women couldn't really run for office. The women didn't have any hopes for being elected to the Senate themselves at that time. So their own political ambitions had to be devoted to supporting the efforts and the careers of the men in their lives. So by angling for social supremacy in Washington, D.C., they were putting themselves forward, but of course they were also pushing the men in their lives' political careers. So they were just contending for those top roles.
Oh, man. Lauren and DePeer, thanks for calling. Hi, appreciate your call.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call, and hello to your guest, Jennifer. I just wanted to say that, well, I'm not familiar with your work, Jennifer, but from just listening for the past few minutes, I'm very encouraged, and I will probably look into your book. It seems you have a great take on Lincoln's political genius and kind of the whole surrounding cabinet that he has. I'm really curious to read more on what you have to say. My question and comment for you is, are you familiar with Howard Zinn's New Press, the People's History Foundation, and some of his take on a more look at the unsung heroes of history? And if you are familiar, what is your comment on him?
All right.
I'm very sorry. The title does ring a bell, but I don't recall that I've read that book. But if you recommend it, I will certainly pick it up. Is that a book that you would encourage me to read, do you think?
I would encourage you greatly to read it. It's called Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. And then through that was in the early 50s or 60s when he wrote that originally. And then through the popularity of that book, he created a whole foundation. And then he's taken like sections his foundation has and gotten historians of a similar ilk to write on these. And one of them is A People's History of the Civil War by David Williams. And very good subject matter.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you for the recommendations.
Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned because at 11:45, we're going to get a different look at the Civil War through letters that were sent between a Wisconsin farmer who was serving in the Union Army and his wife, who was taking care of the farm back home. Right now, though, we're talking with Jennifer Cheverini about her latest novel. It's called Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. It's a wonderful book. I just finished it night before last. It was, and I really, really enjoyed reading it, and I really recommend it to you. And it is a novel, although a lot of it is exactly what happened, but you do put words in people's mouths, I guess.
Well, yes, I have to. I do try to adhere to the historical record as much as I can. I don't move the Battle of Gettysburg to 1864 just because it would be more convenient for my story or anything like that. And I really do enjoy the research process of the of researching the books. And I actually begin right here in Madison at the Wisconsin Historical Society with all of their marvelous archives. And so I rely upon them very much when gathering resources for my historical novels. I also like to look at census records and memoirs, if they're available, and letters that various people were writing. In fact, that was a wonderful resource for Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. The Chase family were all prolific letter writers. They often, the younger girls, only two of Mr. Chase's children survived to adulthood, or survived even into, you know, what we would consider middle school age, Kate and her younger half-sister, Nettie. And often the girls were separated. They were at boarding school, away from their father. And although that made for some very lonely years for Kate and Nettie, it left us a treasure trove of letters that the people in the family exchanged. And that was a wonderful resource for me for really trying to understand the family dynamic and how Kate became so driven to try to please her father and help him achieve his dreams, and how sometimes withholding her father could be. He was a perfectionist for himself, and he demanded that same thing of his daughters. And seeing that dynamic play out in their letters was very informative for me in trying to really get a good grasp of how Kate became the woman she did. She certainly took on a lot of responsibility at a very young age.
16, 17 years old?
She's a teenager, and here she was, becoming her father's hostess, not only in Washington, but in Columbus, Ohio, when he was the governor of Ohio. And that really was where she received all of the training in being an effective hostess and doing the political bargaining that she would put to very good use in Washington. Because it was very important to be able to throw a good dinner party when you're a politician. It still is. And for Mr. Chase to have this wonderful hostess in his daughter, she was young, but she was regarded as the most brilliant woman around. She was excellent at conversation. She could make everyone feel at ease. She could draw out their secrets. She would make connections between people who needed to know each other. And to have that in her in his daughter was certainly a very important asset for Mr. Chase in his political career.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just as an aside, he had a terrible time with his family. I mean, three wives.
Yes, yes.
And then his children.
He suffered a lot of tragedy. He loved his three wives very dearly. Lost them to childbirth and tuberculosis, or consumption, as they called it then. Yeah. And he lost four other daughters.
Yeah.
And
I can't imagine.
it is too horrific to even contemplate. But it certainly made him very sympathetic to Mr. Lincoln and to other people who suffered loss, because he knew what it was to lose a child. Yeah. He knew what it was to lose a wife, to lose a spouse. And although he wasn't always demonstrative in expressing that in perhaps the same way Mr. Lincoln would, or even Kate would, he certainly felt very strongly for other people and showed his compassion in other ways.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, author of many books, including the one we're talking about today, Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have a Facebook comment from from someone who loves your books. They never disappoint. And she wants to wish you the best for this new book from her biggest from your biggest fan.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you so much.
Evelyn and Delavan, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for having this opportunity. My story about discovering Ms. Chiaverini is kind of strange. I have a friend who is a master quilter, and I saw the book. I can't remember which one it was. I think one of her first ones, and I got it from my friend for her birthday. And after they would all come out, the different ones, I would keep picking them up. Well, when my friend came back to visit, she bought the books about 2 years ago and said, here, you need to read these. So I started reading, and I thought, oh, I love this lady. Well, my love, my passion, though, is historical novels, and especially given from the point of view of women. So when I read Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, I decided we needed it for our book club, and it just got rave reviews.
Oh, wonderful. Well, there's a lot to talk about in that book. So I imagine you had a very lively discussion.
There was, and especially between the relationship between Mrs. Lincoln and I can't remember her name right now, but the dressmaker,
Mrs. Keckley.
Yes, and the loyalty and so on, and the frustrations between the two of them. I didn't realize you had this new book out, so I'm certainly going to pick that up. My question is, what are you planning in the future?
Well, I'm working on another Civil War era historical novel, and it's focusing on another woman that we've heard of but maybe don't know a whole lot about. I've decided to write about Julia Dent Grant, the wife of General Grant, and of course, the wife of President Grant as he became. So I learned about her in the course of researching other books, and I was just so fascinated by her story, the little that I knew about it, because she was the daughter of a slave-owning family in Missouri, and she married a soldier, a United States soldier, who would go on to become the general, who would do a lot to bring about the end of the way of life she knew from childhood and actually was quite comfortable in. And I thought, well, how did they manage to make that work? And the more I learned about them, the more I found out that Julia Grant actually spent a lot of time with her husband at military headquarters. Yeah. She would maybe take one or two of the children, and she'd go out and all manner of conveyances to wherever he had set up his headquarters, and would spend weeks or even months at a time with him on the threshold of war. And I wondered how they managed to get along, their families, one being abolitionist, one being slaveholding. And the more I learned about them, the more I found out that they really had a wonderful, happy marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's new ground for me as a writer, because most of my women characters are either self-proclaimed spinsters, widows, or very, very unhappily married. So it was new for me to write about a happy marriage. And
She makes an appearance in your book, in the Mrs. Lincoln's Rival.
Yes, they do. And I like the way, I find it fascinating how all of these people, their lives connected in sometimes very surprising ways. So yes, Julia Grant does appear in Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. And it's probably not a spoiler to tell you that Mrs. Lincoln appears in, and Miss Chase both appear in the book I'm writing about Julia Grant. So their lives all intermingle, because they were all involved in these.
Wait.
Well, I'm not sure when it's going to come out. I think it's probably going to be January of 2015. But if you're on the web, you can take a look at my website. And I always do post publication information on my website, too. So thank you so much. And I just want to make sure I understand this. You gave your friends the books, but then you got them all back.
Yes.
That is a great friend.
Isn't that wonderful?
I love that.
I think they were on loan. I think I had to give them back.
Oh, you have to give them back. Well, that's still a very good friend.
Yes.
It is. And I have just one other question. Have you ever thought about doing any book signing at any of the book stores here in Wisconsin?
Have I ever thought of doing book signings in Wisconsin?
Boy, you're taking all my questions, Evelyn.
Well, that is actually a fantastic idea. And if you, my website is just jenniferscheverini.com. And I actually have 3 Wisconsin book signings coming up. I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble on the west side of Madison tonight at 7. I'm going to be at the Brookfield Public Library at an event sponsored by the library and Boswell Books on Monday, January 20th at 7. And then on Saturday, January 25th, I'll be at Tribeca Gallery and Cafe, Book Gallery and Cafe in Watertown. For you early risers, I'll be there at 10 a.m. But all of that information is on my website if you want addresses and phone numbers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I'm going to grab some of my book club ladies, and we're going to try to meet you.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Well, make sure you let me know that you're the lady I spoke to on the radio.
Oh, okay. And so, you know, we're the old book bag ladies.
The book bag ladies. That is a great name. I might just have to steal that.
Thanks, bye-bye. Evelyn. Yeah, appreciate the call. Oh, what a wonderful call. Evelyn, thank you so much. You can join in, too. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Have you read some of Jennifer's books? Are you a fan of them? Questions about this one or about the Civil War time? 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And I know you're going to have some people say, are you ever going to go back to doing the quilting, the quilt books?
Yes, I do get that question quite a lot. At this point, you know, I wrote...
It weighs off.
You know, I'm not ruling it out entirely. I didn't have the Giving Quilt end with a massive explosion and, you know, putting Elm Creek Manor into ruins. I'm not ruling it out. However, I wrote 20 books to a series. I really never even intended to write a series.
Yeah.
And, you know, 20 novels, 6 pattern books, a reader's guide to the series that came out last fall, an Elm Creek Quilts Companion. I think that's really a lot. And I'm really happy with the work that I did in the Elm Creek Quilts series. And I'm always thrilled to know that readers are discovering them anew, even now. But this is what I'm doing now. I'm really enjoying exploring these women's lives during the Civil War era, and that's what I'm planning to do for the foreseeable future, but I'm certainly not ruling it out entirely.
Well, I'm really enjoying these books. So all of your Civil War books have been just wonderful. And so and there was one that was really connected with quilting, too.
That's true. Yes. So even when I was writing the Elm Creek Quilt series, I was still indulging my love of history by including quite a bit of Civil War history in those books, too. The Lost Quilter is a mm-hmm. book that I wrote from the perspective of a recaptured runaway slave. And it's set in Civil War era South Carolina, both in Edisto mm-hmm. Island and in Charleston. And then The Union Quilters talks about the Civil War on the northern home front. Although, of course, we do see some important Civil War battles through the eyes of the men from that fictional Pennsylvania community who entered in the Civil War. So even if you're not really interested in reading about the quilting aspects of some of my earlier books, there are a number of mm-hmm. historical novels in that series that do stand alone for those readers who love history and Civil War history in particular.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today, author of many books, as we've been talking about, including her latest, Mrs. Lincoln's Rival, and it is out today. I was fortunate enough to get an advance copy, and Judith and I both read the book, and we both loved it. So I think you're going to like it, too. Give us a call with your questions, though, at 1-800-642-1234. Just going back to that, it's Emma called and just enjoyed Sonoma Rose because of the Prohibition era setting. How different is it researching a time like that as opposed to the Civil War era, she wonders?
Well, some of researching newer or more recent eras is a little bit easier because you tend to have more photographs available, more newspaper accounts available. But as one of the great things about the Civil War era is just as the Chase family were prolific letter writers, The people of that era tended to be wonderful keepers of journals, writers of memoirs. And so there's this abundance of first-person accounts. So every era has its own own areas where things are easier to find and where they're more difficult mm-hmm. to find. But that's part of the challenge of research that I really like. Yeah. It's, to me, it feels like historical detective work. And Sonoma Rose is actually one of those books that's in the Elm Creek Quilt series that is also a standalone historical mm-hmm. novel. And I thought
it was a
little
edgy in spots, actually, in that book.
Pardon me?
A little edgy in spots in that book.
Well, you know, when you're writing about people trying to keep their vineyard alive in Prohibition era Northern California, there's going to be a certain criminal element involved. But that's another book that I especially really love, and I enjoyed researching and writing. When I first started out, I was following the advice, write what you know, because that's what beginning authors are always told, write what you know. And that's what I did with The Quilter's Apprentice. But in more recent years, my motivation has been write what you want to learn about. Mm. So if there's a question out there that I am curious about finding the answer to, or if there's a particular era or region of the country or historical person that fascinates me and I want to know more about them, one of the best ways for me to learn more about them is to do all of this research and then write a story. I'm not a historian. I'm not a biographist. I'm a novelist. But I do enjoy bringing in all those wonderful historical resources into the stories that I tell.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, they're wonderful books. I had a Facebook comment from Judy who's actually listening to us from North Carolina.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, and she has every one of your books and loves every one of them. She's going to order Mrs. Lincoln's Rival today.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I know a great place you can order it in North Carolina. Quail Ridge Books is just absolutely one of my favorite independent bookstores. And I was out there in the fall for The Spy Mistress, my last book. And it's not on the tour this month, but I do hope to make it back there again because it's a fantastic store. And maybe we'll meet up there someday. That would be fun.
That would be fun and would be wonderful. Well, we have lots more that we can talk about relating to this book. There is one person that we have not even talked about. And when you were talking about the different women and mentioning that women you wrote about that had terrible marriages.
Oh, yes.
Here we have William Sprague.
Yes.
Who turned out to be married to Kate. Who married
Kate. Yes, that's right. And, you know, then as now, sometimes wonderful people marry not so wonderful people, and we wonder why. Yes, that was their marriage started out with so much promise and so much hope and so much love and affection, and things went very badly very early on and never really got much better. It turned out to be an abusive marriage, and it was something that broke Kate's heart. Her husband was an alcoholic. He was an adulterer. And she really just never saw that coming. And, you know, from our modern perspective, we can see the signs and we can see that she's going the wrong direction. But to her, a young woman in love, she unfortunately didn't pick up on the signals that we all wish she would have. But I thought it was intriguing that she fell in love with a man who was so unlike her father in character and physical appearance, in ambition, because she revered her father. She respected him, loved him, greatly admired him. And yet she fell in love with a man who was almost his exact opposite. Salmon P. Chase was very devout and never touched a drop of alcohol. Her husband was not quite as reverent, and he was an alcoholic from early on. Her husband didn't smoke. That was a vice, another vice that belonged to William. And also in the way that they treated her. And that might have been what drew her to him. Her father loved her dearly, but did not always express it. Whereas William was very passionate, very demonstrative, but it wasn't always there in his heart. He was very good with some of the signs of romance, but when it came down to actual respect and commitment and devotion, he unfortunately did not have those qualities. And other people recognized that in him when Kate did not. And so there was a lot of talk at the time that Kate was only marrying him for his money, or that, worse yet, her father was pushing the marriage because he wanted access to that money to fund his next campaign for president. But if you look at the letters that the father and daughter exchanged, that they both exchanged with William, it was quite evident that Kate was very much in love with William, wanted to marry him, and that it was her father who had doubts and had concerns and was hoping that maybe they would call it off. Even when he was talking about the invitations, he said, yes, they're planning to get married in November if they don't change their minds. So even at that late date, he was hedging his bets. But
there was another man in the book that you write about that was, what was his name? Lincoln's...
John Hay.
John Hay. And was he, in fact, a good friend, or was this part of the novel?
He was definitely a good friend of Kate. They were, it's in the historic record that they did attend the theater together. He did come and serenade her outside her window. He did throw her bridal party, this wonderful excursion. You know, they did all go on this excursion before the wedding. So it's in the historical record that he did do these things. How much he felt for her romantically, I'm not really clear. But there is a very revealing comment in his own journal where he made some kind of remark about how it's so tiresome that Chase and Kate are always promoting his presidential aspirations. And then he said, because of that ambition that she had, she was only that made her only slightly more wonderful than every other woman in Washington. So I think there were some feelings there. But that's where the novelist art has to come in. And, while adhering to the historical record as much as I could, I did maybe give him more of a romantic interest in Kate than was in the historical record. But I think it's quite likely that it was
that
there.
Was there anyway.
Hey, so many other men were in love with Kate. Why not John Hay, too?
Well, you have written a wonderful book, Jennifer. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Again, when are you in the next few days, you're...
I'm going to be traveling around the country and mostly in the Midwest. And those dates are all listed on my website and on my Facebook page. But for your Wisconsin listeners, tonight at 7, I'll be at the Westown Barnes & Noble here in Madison. And then on Monday, I'll be at the Brookfield Public Library January 20th at 7 p.m. at an event sponsored by the Brookfield Public Library and another one of my very favorite independent bookstores, Boswell Books. And then on Saturday, the 25th, a new bookstore to me, which is probably going to become another favorite. I'll be at the Tribeca Gallery Books and Cafe at 10 a.m. and in Watertown, Wisconsin. So I hope all kinds of Wisconsin readers and book club bag ladies, book bag ladies, I hope you'll all come out to learn about the book and let me know what you're reading. That's always great, too.
Thank you so much. And, of course, you have to let us know when that next book.
Yes, I'm thinking January 2015, but my publisher will let me know soon.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer Cheverini, author of many books, including the one we talked about today, Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. And you know what? If you to find her Facebook page and to find more information on the book, you can go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. I know many of you are already familiar with it, and it'll be a quick click to get you onto her page and also getting a copy of her book. We have, so interesting, isn't it, to learn what happens behind the scenes during these significant periods in our national history? Coming up next, we're going to learn more about the Civil War, and through a fascinating source, Judy Cook compiled letters between a Wisconsin farmer serving in the Union Army and his wife back home, and also some letters that took place between himself and his children, his sons. It's an incredible glimpse into everyday life in the Civil War era. And it's coming up next right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.